Hello, and welcome to another episode of Waves of Change, a Great Lakes Now digital series focused on highlighting the diverse voices and perspectives shaping the environmental justice movement throughout the Great Lakes region. I'm Anna Seisling, and I'm so grateful to you for tuning in.
This program was brought to you by the Fred and Barbara Earp Family Foundation, the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, Richard C. Devereaux Foundation for Energy and Environmental Programs at Detroit PBS, Polk Family Fund, DTE Foundation, and contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Joining me today is Darren Riley, co-founder and CEO of Just Air, a Detroit-based organization whose mission is to use data, technology, and analysis to protect the 20,000 breaths each person takes every day. Darren, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So Just Air is really an organization that partners with governments, residents, and industry to provide a comprehensive air quality management platform. Talk to me about what exactly that platform is. Is it an app? Kind of put this in layman's terms for us.
JustAir.app is not a downloadable app. You can go to JustAir.app and create a profile on your phone if you have a mobile phone, or on the website on your laptop. And what it does is you can subscribe to monitors around you, and you got to put your phone number in. And
got
now
it.
You'll get an alert. And that alert will send you a link to go back to the app. So you don't have to keep opening an app and badges and all that. So the idea is that you don't really, majority, what we found is majority of folks just want to receive the alerts, mm-hmm. right? And so going through the text-based situation, people turn their badges off. So you can control those alerts on the portal. You can see the data on the platform, on the portal, just as if you click on the app, but through text messages.
You are now based in Detroit, and I know Just Air is Detroit-based, but you're actually from Texas, is what you told me when you and I talked before recording today. So can you talk to me a little bit about how your own move to Detroit and the sort of health journey and complications that followed is kind of connected to you creating Just Air in some ways?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, originally from Houston, Texas, grew up there, went to school in Pittsburgh, so that's kind of what brought me up north in this cold Midwest. I haven't left yet, so something is attracting me to the mm-hmm. cold. And moved to Detroit around 2016, so I've been here about a quarter of my life. And when I moved to Detroit, living in Southwest, I developed asthma around 2018. I think that really opened my eyes, because not having those issues prior to moving to Detroit, prior to moving to my neighborhood, at least it made me ask the questions like, what's going on? I'm pretty conscious around, you know, what's going on around me and in my health. And so having a struggle to breathe, and also being an athlete and understanding how that impacts my lifestyle and kind of the things I want to do and enjoy as long as I can, just had me ask why a couple more times, and recognizing that where I live has a huge, huge impact on the outcomes of my health. And that kind of what inspired and sparked some of these ideas.
And I want to ask you now, Darren, a question that I ask everybody really who comes on Waves of Change. Like you heard in the intro there, these are conversations that are really rooted in thinking about environmental justice. What does that mean? What does that look like? And really, I think trying to broaden our perception and understanding collectively of what environmental justice is and what environmental justice work can be. So I want to ask you in this moment, what does that phrase environmental justice mean to you?
I think they're, you know, well-defined terms in environmental justice and just, you know, frameworks and things that have, you know, been that people look to really share what environmental justice is. But speaking from my experience and how I express environmental justice, my underlying philosophy is that, you know, we don't get to choose, you know, when we enter this world, we don't get to choose who our parents are, what income we have, what color of our skin. I should not have an unequal go at a good life just because of the situation that I was born into. And so when I think about environmental justice, just because I'm born in an environment, we're all products of our environment. We need, as stakeholders and folks who can actually make a difference and change, we need to create a future so that anyone that comes after us into these environments have an equal go at it, breathing clean air, access to clean water, food, shelter, all those things, education, all those things that can set up for success. And if they make the right decisions in life, they can have the right outcome and not be hampered by the things they can control. So that's what it means to me. Just make sure everyone gets what they deserve.
So getting back to the platform a little bit, you know, this is, like you said, something you created. But from my understanding, this work is really collaborative in the sense it wouldn't be possible, truly, without the buy-in of community members, governments, industry. Can you speak to the collaborative nature of this project and why these different voices and entities are really so critical to your larger mission and purpose?
The fundamental values that I grew up on, and when you're talking about centering culture, centering community in the work that we do, you know, I'm very blessed to be able to express that, those values, through the work that we're doing here. And I want to double down on that community-centric, community-focused design and development. And what that means to me is anything we build in Just Air, we have to consider the things that may bring on challenges or could cause friction within community, right? For example, there is these air quality devices, you know, they're in your neighborhood on a pole. If you don't know what that is that surveillance? Is that something that's working against me, not for me? So we have to go over and beyond and make sure that we're working with community hand in hand to ensure that we have the proper education and the proper awareness to understand that that device is working for you, not against you. This is a small example, but everything that you see in the Just Air suite of services, at the end goal, we're always thinking about, can the community member access this information? Can folks understand what to do with information that overwhelm? Think about balancing trauma, but information, but also balancing the right to be aware of these things, right? And I tell my team all the time, can my grandma open this app in 20 seconds, understand what the issues are and what she could do about it? And thinking about, you know, really pushing ourselves. And we're not, there's a lot of challenges. We're not there yet, but, you know, at least the values and the culture is there, rooted in community to do everything that we're doing.
I want to ask you a little bit more about the actual experience and taking into account what you're saying about the layout of the app. And, you know, I really appreciate what you said about your grandma being able to access and understand how to use this technology. But, you know, talking about elders and thinking about community and the sort of collaborative nature that's so inherent in Just Air, I want to ask you a little bit about your own lineage in arriving to this work. If I'm not mistaken, your background is in tech, but I wonder if you can speak to any formative teachers and mentors that you've had as you've been working on Just Air and getting more involved in sort of bridging these divides between tech and really what is public health and environmental justice.
Holistically, you know, it comes from, you know, folks like my mother, my grandmother, a lot of matriarchs in my family, who have a very protective nature, want to make sure that their kids are safe. So those values and hearing their voices, you know, hey, get off that fence, or those things of protective nature and making sure that, you know, communities are safe and safe from harm and people are safe from harm, especially the most vulnerable populations, is rooted in me, right? And so fast forward, you know, as I've navigated my life and being able to go to a school where I was able to get a technical education in software development and be in the technology space, I was always looking around the room and recognizing that, hey, the technology and stuff that we build don't have that lens to it. I won't say that lens in particular, but my experience coming from the community I come from, being in these rooms, is a unique voice. And we have to express that through our work and technology, right? We see it in our art, in our music, you know, making sure that the culture and the values are also expressed in our work. So I say that to say, fast forward, moving to Detroit, you know, I don't have a background in organizing, but listening to the organizers and the mothers who've been protecting environmental justice and standing on the front lines, you know, before I was born, Teresa Landrum, Donnell Wilkins, you know, Catherine Savoy, folks in Southeast Michigan who really advocate and really push the needle, and who knows how bad it would be if they were not in place, is sitting down and being a true student and listening to the things that they express and being able to take that legacy knowledge and knowledge to carry on and infuse that, you know, within our work, I think is something that I stick to. So I'm glad you asked that question, because sometimes we can forget, you know, this heads down and doing this work, but I wouldn't really be here today if it wasn't for, I'll just say it, you know, many women in my life who, in seeing the values they express and protecting the community and loved ones, something I want to make sure that we express through technology.
Just Air has been around now for, you know, a handful of years. And I wonder, at this point, I know that you still have so many goals and things that you're kind of working on and still really refining the technology and some of these larger projects that you're taking on. But What have been some of the biggest lessons that have come up so far for you?
I want to speak more from perspective of, as we are, you know, we're a for-profit, you know, technology company with the lens that we have. And speaking from a lens as a Black entrepreneur, this understanding that you have to stand on your values and also work with people who want to work with you. I think it's something I learned through this journey. We're three years old. And when you are building partnerships, the best partnerships that I've seen in this journey are people who add to kind of the pot. Oh, what if we could do this? Or, oh man, it'd be awesome if we could do that. Not so much like, oh, but I'm looking for this or this. You know, it's the same thing, but just the mentality and the values of leaning forward and looking at this work as their work as well, and creating true genuine partnerships. So I think the lessons I've learned is, one, working with folks, you know, who want to work with us. I know it sounds very simple, but it's advice that I would carry on forever and would advise anyone who's trying to do something very big and bold to make sure you follow that road. But also the last one is recognizing that there is an opportunity to marry, one, the personal experience and the life experience of folks and technology. We think of like left brain, right brain. I do think there's an opportunity to synergize or combine those efforts to create something that really touches the heart and souls and really moves the needle forward in terms of the space and work. So that's something that we continue to balance. How do you balance real-time data that communities deserve with accuracy from coming from that monitor? So that's something that we are trying to drive towards. So all I have to say is I think really what I'm learning is being authentic, working with people who really want to work with you, and staying true to your values. I think everything else will work out. You know, if we fail, look, we're not going to fail being who we're not. I'll say that.
Yeah. Well said. Sure. You know, in terms of accomplishments, this inhaler that I know a little bit about, and then also this really sort of multifaceted work that you've been doing with Wayne County. Talk to me a little bit about those two things and if there are any other like really big accomplishments, things that you feel really proud of so far.
I know that when you have an exaggeration, I actually was recently hospitalized over Thanksgiving for the first time since I developed asthma. Which was really sad and very frustrating experience. The learnings there is, even myself, who I feel like I'm pretty controlled or very bodily aware of the things that are happening to my health, it's still traumatizing going through that. You want to forget that experience. And so when we build this connected inhaler, which is the brainchild of Wayne County and a lot of the amazing health folks like Dr. Abdul Asiyed, Aja and Katarina and a lot of the amazing team that was looking at how do we create the most healthy county possible and really get out in front of this work. So this inhaler project is really to capture the experiences that are often traumatizing so that we can better find pinpoint where are my triggers, right? Is it on the east side when I'm playing in a dusty gym? Is it in the school where, you know, children are trying to learn? Is it in my house where maybe we need to do a better job inspecting and make sure we're cleaning up or using better products? Cats, I don't know. You know, so what my point is that the more we know, the more we call like an asthma diary, the more we know about our triggers, the better we can curate care and make sure we keep people out of the emergency room. At the end of the day, none of this work, none of this data, all the millions of data points matter if we are not delivering on better health outcomes. And so our partnership with Wayne County is really putting a flag in the ground saying that, hey, we can do this work really well at the highest standard of like the EPA standard in terms of data quality assurance and all that, while making sure that we go over and beyond and really advance the opportunities to ensure that we protect human health that they deserve to have.
And for people who are, you know, sort of hearing you talk about the inhaler, I reference the inhaler. I don't know, though, if we actually really kind of concretely mm-hmm. described exactly yeah. what it is. So can you explain that for us?
Yeah, so this is a prototype, by the way. I will say it's not a medical device. It is a Fitbit, if you will, for your inhaler. So what it is a holder. So you can take any kind of inhaler product, different sizes, different types. It's really for rescue inhalers when there's exaggeration, and wrap our holder around it that when you trigger your inhaler, it then goes to look for any monitor that's closest to you, rather be a mobile monitor we give you, a mobile monitor, something that follows you on your backpack, in your pocket, in your purse, or an indoor monitor that you may have in your house, or one of the 100 outdoor monitors that are around us. The whole goal is that anytime, and it was why it works really well in this county, because we have so many instruments sampling data in real time, is that no matter where you are in the 43 communities across Wayne County, rather be in Romulus or you're in Grosse Pointe or you're on the east side or you're in Hamtramck, when you pull that inhaler, we have a more granular sample of what was going on around that exaggeration, right? And so that can better help us understand hotspots. If we have a whole cluster of folks using their inhalers on a certain day and time, that says something. How do we basically capture this information, marry that environmental health data so that you at going through that traumatic experience of using your inhaler, you automatically have data that you can show your doctor or even for yourself so you can better avoid those things in the future.
From your view, having this unique perspective, what are the current gaps in our public health paradigm? And how do you see the growth of Just Air kind of fitting into maybe a brighter and better future that's merging these two things a little bit better?
My philosophy is that the environment and you as a human kind of one and the same when I think about holistic health. So oftentimes we try to separate the environment from our human, health, but these are very important, right? When there's a huge surge in emergency visits for asthma due to forest fires, that's telling that story, right? The environment is impacting us. So how do we make sure we maintain a healthy and clean environment while also making good personal decisions to have better outcomes? And so what I see the opportunity is, and because of my personal experience of being impacted by the environment or seeing the health disparities and coming with a lens of justice rooted in our work, I think for the sake of public health, I think there's a huge gap in kind of moving that paradigm from going to the doctor and saying, hey, do you smoke or what's going on in your house or is there cats or pets? Putting the burden on the person, and I'm not a doctor, so there's probably research why those questions are asked. But I will say, as a patient, I would love to come to my doctor and say, hey, I recognize that your air quality in your zip code in your community was this and this on this day. How do you feel that day? It's an opportunity to use data and embed that for personal care to really have a better outcome, but also understand and paint the whole picture of our experiences and our unique experiences coming from where we come from or our housing or where we are in our place in the world. So all that to say, with Just Air, and because we have this level of expertise and environmental data and how to sample data and understand how to have clean, high quality data, I mean, the next step is how do we forge those partnerships to have better health outcomes?
And, to take it one step further, thinking about the possible connections around technology and public health, I also wonder if you can touch a little bit on how you potentially see the growth of Just Air fitting into a future where public health and technology is then informing and creating meaningful policy.
Amen.
Let's hear a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. So no one wants to live near something that is adversely affecting their lives, right? Whether it be a facility or mobile sources of pollution being trucks or heavy traffic, areas. I live right next to the Canada Bridge. So you can imagine all the trucks that are sitting there idling on the bridge and all that diesel that's entering your lungs can be very impactful. A point of saying all that is that Just Air's theory of change is really leaning in with health first and making sure that folks are protected. And if we can really drill down and have high quality data and recognize where those sources are that are contributing to adverse effects to health, there's a huge value proposition to be said about keeping people healthy, right? You're keeping kids in school. You think about when people are trying to go work, a lot of folks work outdoors. When there's events that are happening, how do we make sure we're protecting them so they can put food on the table and keep our economy going, our local economy going? So all that said is that when we look at health, we can have more informed policy decisions and not just thinking about the regulatory environment on air quality permits for the Clean Air Act. I think we can go over and beyond and really get an A+ by fusing air quality data or environmental data with the public health outcomes so that we are tilting the scales, if you will, to making sure that everybody gets the rights that they deserve around breathing clean air.
Going back to what you were describing about really centering and constantly thinking, all right, could my grandma use and understand this app? Let's talk a little bit about design equity and access. Can you tell me about the layout of this app and the fact that this is something that needs to appeal to folks of all backgrounds and levels of tech literacy?
We got ways to go. I think the good news is that this is our our main priority is, you know, making sure that we're putting alongside folks. To give you a simple example is, I guess two good examples is like, why did we, you know, decide to not make a downloadable app? We can easily make a downloadable app and information. We wanted to make it more accessible. Not everyone, you know, has the data or, you know, the access to the, some of the alert systems for badges and all that kind of stuff. So we want to make sure that we could just have infrastructure to send text messages. You respond closer to text messages. And that was informed by community members and a lot of folks who actually may not have a smartphone. Those are the kind of design decisions that we're thinking. We have room to grow in terms of internationalization, making sure that we have all of our languages across our app. That's something that we're working on in 2025. One other example of terms of access is our project and our partnership with the city of Dearborn. Huge shout out to Ali, Samir, and the whole team out there who really on the forefront of making sure that this data does serve action awareness for the community. One thing that came out of that is accessibility. The city of Dearborn, not everyone having access to for digital literacy and, you know, huge immigration population, we built the air quality light. So in the park, instead of looking at, down at your phone, seeing a light and also have, making sure we have signage in Arabic to make sure we're going over and beyond to make sure you can actually see the air, right? So the light turns green, red, orange, you know, warning signs and associated information. At the end of the day, we have so much room to go. This is very complicated. We're talking about particulate matter. We're talking about ozone, NO2, chemicals. It's how do we distill that and serve different audiences and different levels of expertise within the space to a degree that is equitable. So we got room to grow, but I think our heart is literally, that's where our heads are at. And if you're listening to this and you have feedback on the app, please, please hit us up and help us make sure that it's more accessible for you.
For so many different folks involved in environmental justice, it is so easy to get burnt out doing this work. So I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about what is giving you hope in this moment? What's keeping you going?
Very heavy work. And I think it keeps you going because you see how much time and how much effort folks who came before you have put in this work. Or thinking like when I have an kind of emerging tightness of my chest, I think about, you know, to be real, like, you know, there's a child that probably dealing with that with smaller lungs or growing lungs that can impact them long term, impact their learning ability. So I always, you know, my self dialogue is like, who am I not to, when I was afforded this opportunity, you know, blessed with opportunity to understand technology and be able to express it in this moment of time where, you know, this work is becoming more and more accepted at a national level and a global level. So I think timing, the people around me and the legacy that came before me, really keeps me going. But at the end of the day, it's really for the future and make sure kids don't have to walk out, can walk outside, play around and not have the concerns of their health long-term and short-term. So,
I wonder as we wrap up here, Darren, if there are any other organizations or folks that you would like to share and recommend that people check out if they want to learn more about environment and public health issues impacting folks in Detroit or elsewhere around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about Just Air, we're just a small portion of this work, right? This work is really Teresa Landrum, you know, Donnell Wilkins, Lucretia Daniels, Kathleen Savoy, folks who've been pushing the movement. I got to give a shout out to C4, Community Collaboration on Climate Change in Grand Rapids on the west side of the state, doing hard work, and many others who've been rooting in this work. Obviously, the folks who've done amazing work in Flint, who really put environmental justice on the forefront for the nation to see. And we're bringing it back to the forefront. So all that to say, here in Michigan and beyond, we work with tribal communities in North Carolina. Huge shout out to Eastern Band Cherokee, North Carolina, who are doing this work, really rooted in environmental justice. Folks on the other side of the lake in Chicago. But we would not exist if it wasn't for those folks putting the work over and over and beyond, decade after decade, to make sure we have the future that we deserve. And so we'll continue to push as long as, you know, as long as we can, and make sure that we are being held accountable to the community. And I really do mean that. If you're listening to this and you feel like we're moving wrong, please reach out to me. I'm really excited to create this future in 2025. It's going to be a big year. I don't get to reflect on my work, so this is really good to have this opportunity.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad to have given you the opportunity. Darren Riley, co-founder and CEO of Just Air, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Waves of Change is a production of Great Lakes Now and Detroit PBS. This digital series is produced and edited by me, Anna Seisling, with additional support from Jordan Wingrove. Great Lakes Now's executive producer is Rob Green, and Detroit PBS Vice President of Content is Ed Moore.
This program was brought to you by the Fred and Barbara Earp Family Foundation, the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, Richard C. Devereaux Foundation for Energy and Environmental Programs at Detroit PBS, Polk Family Fund, DTE Foundation, and contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.